Rainmaker FM.
Copyblogger FM is brought to you by StudioPress Sites, the complete hosted solution that makes WordPress fast, secure, and easy without sacrificing power or flexibility. Feel free to upload your own WordPress theme or use one of the 20 beautiful StudioPress themes that are included and just one click away. Explore all the amazing things you can do with the StudioPress site, and you'll understand why it offers a lot more than traditional WordPress hosting. No matter how you'll be using your site, we have a plan to fit your needs and your budget. To learn more, visit rainmaker.fm/StudioPress. That's rainmaker.fm/StudioPress. Hey there, it's so good to see you again. Welcome back to Copyblogger FM, the content marketing podcast. Copyblogger FM is about emerging content marketing trends, interesting disasters, and enduring best practices, along with the occasional rant. My name is Sonia Simone, and I'm the Chief Content Officer for Rainmaker Digital. You can normally catch me at least once a week on the Copyblogger blog, as well as get some more mindset and ranty stuff at Remarkable Communication. And remember, you can always get show notes for every episode, including links and free extras, by pointing your browser to copyblogger.fm, and that's also where you can find the complete show archive. So, you have very probably seen the news talking about some of the rather unappetizing practices that have been unearthed going on around Facebook and around a company called Cambridge Analytica. So, Facebook's founder, Mark Zuckerberg, actually had to put on a suit to testify before Congress, and a whole lot of people realized that those terms of service weren't just legalese and gibberish. And a lot of us realized with some dismay that our friends had compromised our privacy in order to play a game on Facebook. So, a lot going on, a lot to think about, a lot to talk about. And I have been thinking a lot about what I think we as marketers should be adopting as best practices, what I think we should be doing differently or doing more of. And of course, I've also been talking about this with my team. So we're still having those conversations. I don't know that I have a final draft version yet, but I do have some things that I feel pretty strongly about, and I thought today would be a great day to talk about those. And as much as I can, I'm going to talk about things that are as evergreen as I can make them. So, of course, this is a rapidly shifting environment. Things are changing, and also tactics are really interesting. You know, new tools come up, and we have new tactics we can try out. But I also think it's important to talk about principles, to talk about what's doing right, and not necessarily what a particular platform is going to let us get away with. But, you know, coming into a new tool or a new platform, what would be the right thing to do to the best of our ability? And so here are a couple of ideas. And the first overarching one is that I do not accept at all that using segmentation or automation or using social media advertising necessarily means invading anybody's privacy. And so it's very natural for people to be nervous about a kind of a Big Brother scenario where companies are spying on us and then using that to sell us things. And I think that nervousness is natural and normal and in some cases rather well-founded. I do want to talk about something that, you know, all marketers really know in 2018, which is that you can't really make somebody buy something they don't want to buy. You can present it as a possibility. And the only real way to, quote unquote, make somebody buy something is just to lie. And some of what we're seeing, I think, with the landscape around especially political advertising does involve a fair amount of lying. So on the one hand, you know, political campaigns are using segmentation. So they're finding out, okay, this person will be likely to vote this way and this person will be likely to vote a different way and delivering messages. I don't think that's unethical. I don't think that's problematic. There's actually very much analog world, you know, counterparts to that. But sending content to people that's just telling flat out lies, okay, obviously we have an ethical problem with that. So if you have to lie to make your case, I think it goes without saying, that's unethical. That's not ethically acceptable. So this whole idea around using what we're doing with our social accounts, which are quote unquote free, big ironic air quotes around the word free. You know, if I like a gluten-free page on Facebook and then I see an ad that's offering me like good gluten-free bread, I don't see that as invading my privacy. I see it as giving me a relevant option that's actually like of interest to me. But this has always been a tricky area about social media. Social media feels private because it's in your office or it's in your living room or it's inside your phone. But mostly it's not private. Mostly it's quasi-public. So the gluten-free page on Facebook, probably somewhat harmless. The fountain pen page on Facebook or the gardening group, probably pretty harmless. But what happens when someone maybe belongs to a group for people who are working through significant depression or people who are living with diabetes? So now we're starting to get into the territory of medical information, and that's a completely different line. So I will just say, if you are in that kind of business, if you, you know, might be using targeted advertising to reach people on a medical basis or some other sensitive basis, you probably want an attorney to come in and advise you about the laws surrounding the privacy of your potential clients. So don't get legal advice from podcasts, including mine or anyone else's. Having said that, I'm going to talk about a piece of legislation that in one way is getting a lot of attention and in another way probably is not getting quite enough attention, and that is the European Union's new General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR. So this is a new law in the European Union. It is taking effect in May of this year, and it has rules about what kinds of information you can store. So I'm going to give you a little bit of just a few categories. I got this from ConvertKit's FAQ page on the GDPR, and I will get you a link to that on the resources page at copyblogger.fm. Okay, so when we do email marketing today, a lot of times we'll include tags that indicate, you know, that a person did this or is this or whatever it is. Here are some pieces of sensitive personal data that ConvertKit will not be processing because it would not be in compliance with the GDPR. So that would include data that reveals racial or ethnic origin, political opinions, religious or philosophical beliefs, trade union membership, genetic data, biometric data, and data concerning health. Also data concerning a person's sex life or their sexual orientation. So these are all things ConvertKit is just not going to allow you to store that data if you had been storing it in order to comply with the new law. Now, this individual law is still in the process of being implemented. I'm sure there will be some clarification about categories. For example, if you run an email list that actually serves the lesbian and gay community in Europe, or you run a political email newsletter, you know, I don't know what the answers are to those. I will actually ask some of my folks over at ConvertKit to see if I can find out. And this is only Europe, right? It's only applies to subscribers who are in Europe, not where you are, but where your subscribers live. But here's why I think even if you know for a fact you have zero, you know, subscribers in Europe, I think the concern around both the GDPR and Cambridge Analytica are showing a trend. And I think this is probably going to be a solid real trend, which is increasing concern for individual privacy in a digital age when data is being shared and analyzed and sliced and diced in order to serve advertisers. So the privacy side is gaining more of a voice and people are more concerned about it. And I think it's just going to be more and more relevant. So we have to think about it and make smart decisions. And if you want to future-proof your business against potential, you know, future legislation, but probably more important, if you just want to make sure that your audience, your customers, your subscribers, your readers feel comfortable about what you're doing, then I think it pays to stay very squeaky clean around this stuff and to really, really mind your P's and Q's and really be a very ethical and transparent person and just keep your nose clean. So here are a few things I am recommending to people. This is how we do business at Copyblogger. And again, I'm still thinking about this. So this podcast is in some ways kind of a first draft of some of my thoughts. And I would love to hear your thoughts. You can hit me up on Twitter at Sonia Simone, or a better, more focused way to find me is just come to copyblogger.fm and leave a comment. And that way I'm absolutely sure to see it. So my first recommendation is, and this has been my recommendation for a long time because I think it works better, is segmenting by interest and behavior rather than demographics. So in the old days, old direct mail days, you used to buy a list of, let's say you bought a list of 100,000 white men between the ages of 34 and 59. They made a certain income. They owned a certain kind of house. And then as a marketer, you would observe, you know, which demographics responded to which physical mail messages you were sending out, and you would make your adjustments accordingly. So that's where this idea of marketing to demographics even comes from, is the tradition of direct mail. And even back in the day, there was a certain amount of segmentation by interest. So if you subscribed to a magazine about golf, then that magazine would sell your information, your data, to somebody who had a specialty golf product. That person would buy that list, or more accurately, would borrow, rent that list and use it to send you information about their product. And this is not like it worked that way in the past, and it's not like that anymore. So I bought plants this spring from a mail order service, and within maybe 10 days, I started getting more gardening catalogs. And that's because that nursery sold my information. That's part of their business model. Part of their profit comes from selling the fact that I bought plants to other companies who send me catalogs. And this kind of has two sides. So it can get annoying, and usually it gets annoying when there's way more marketing material coming in than I'm really, you know, willing to take advantage of. So like one or two new gardening catalogs is actually a plus. If you know a gardener, you know, gardening catalog season is like, it's kind of fun. It's kind of wonderful. But if there's 10 or 20 or 30, then that's just recycling. You know, it just goes right into the bin. So I think, and as you guys know, if you know my work, I'm a lousy futurist, so I might be wrong, but I think that more and more Facebook advertising is going to focus more around what people are interested in and less on those kind of demographic numbers. Either Facebook is going to, you know, just decide not to collect those anymore, or legislation will be enacted so that they're not allowed to, you know, to present that information anymore to advertisers. And in some cases, I know that Facebook has stopped using third-party tools that provide some of that information, for example, income. You don't tell Facebook how much money you make. They know how much money you make because that comes from a third-party source, and they are severing ties with some of those sources. Will that last? I don't know. You know, I don't know. So, you know, my view is that the most ethical way to work with this, and also a very effective way to work with this, is to find people around their interests and interests in things like public groups that they have been willing to publicly say, I am interested in this topic. And then entice those people to learn more about your solution by offering relevant content. And the other really important element of this that I think we need to consider is that 30 catalogs problem. We need to not flood people with information. You know, and Copyblogger in the past has really been into like, hey, we want to like give you all the things. We want to give you this huge toolbox to make you successful. It gets to be too much. And people are facing more information overload than they probably have even a few years ago. So smart automation is really what lets individual people, lets me, lets you click on questions about what I'm interested in, about what I find relevant as a buyer, as a consumer. And then I get material that's relevant to me, and I don't get a ton of junk that I have to wade through. That's just rude. So very much tied to this, because very much the natural next step is my second kind of big idea of the day, which is earning permission with value. Earning permission to talk to people, to send them offers by providing value in the form of content. And at Copy Blogger, that's really, for us, that's our cornerstone of effective content marketing, earning permission to make offers by delivering value with content. And that term value is determined by the audience, is not determined by the marketer. And once we have earned that permission, then we can start talking about relevant opportunities to do business. But again, those opportunities have to give value. I have to give you the opportunity to do something you would have an interest in doing, not something irrelevant and spammy. I think so many of us hear these terms. We hear terms like segmentation or automation. You know, we hear about a tool like a chat bot, and it just feels very cold. It feels very robotic. It feels creepy. But really, smart segmentation and smart automation, and they go together. It's more like not having to tell four different people at the cable company what your account number is. Like, you tell the first guy and then he passes you to the next person and then you have to tell her as well. And you do that four or five times and you start to say, do you not have any, you know, computers where you work? Because this seems weird. So of course you could use segmentation in a creepy way. And of course you could use automation to do something creepy. But that's not at all innate in the tool. You know, the tool is really, when it's used properly, it's used to improve the quality of the communication and filter out junk that nobody needs. So everybody thinks, I don't want to see any ads. You know, everybody thinks, I want to see zero ads. But speaking for me, for myself, if you have a line on a good gluten-free cupcake, then you could totally pass that my way. You know, I don't care if it's an ad or not. I would love to take a look at that. Ads for gardening, ads for fountain pens, those are not intrusive to me. They're opportunities for me to do something I would want to do anyway. Whereas ads for like the latest fad diet or the latest get-rich-quick scheme, those are irrelevant. Those feel like spam to me. They're not relevant to what I'm interested in today. And they might not technically be spam, but they feel like spam. And there's that, you know, there's that gray area where if it feels like spam, then it kind of is. And marketers who ignore that, there are some marketers who just really roll their eyes at that and say, I'm following the law, you know, suck it up. Those people are training their audiences to tune them out. It's like, well, you won't respect my preference. You won't respect the fact that I've already marked this ad as not relevant to me five times. So you've just trained me to ignore you. And I will never listen to anything you have to say because I think you're a creep. You know, so that's why it matters. It doesn't only matter because it's ethical. It matters because it's ethical. And it matters because it's a stupid business decision. It's not an either or. I don't believe that. I don't think we have to choose between effective business and ethical behavior. I think the most effective business should be built on that ethical foundation from minute one. And then I've just got one more quick one, trying to keep this reasonably brief for a podcast episode, which is, I think it's very important that you spell out in clear language what you're going to do with information that you collect. So people got burned by this group, Cambridge Analytica, because some people downloaded an app that gave that company access to their friends' data. So I didn't choose to interact with Cambridge Analytica, but maybe my friend did. Now, Facebook has locked that down, but I promise you, pinky swear, it will come up again on somebody's platform, or something equally insane will come up on somebody's platform. You know, the idea that I can give permission for you to mine my friend's data, that's a BS idea. It doesn't pass any kind of a common sense test. And I promise you, the next outrageous thing will also not pass a common sense test, but I also promise you it's going to be coming, right? Somebody will do something ridiculous because marketing, because bad marketers are why we can't have nice things. So pretty much anybody who uses a free, again, free is in ironic air quotes, a free service clicks on those terms of service. And we're just sort of like, I mean, they're 18 pages long and we shouldn't do that. But realistically, how many people that you know or I know would really be able to understand the ramifications of this thing if they read them? I mean, I wouldn't. I have no idea what these things mean. They're written by lawyers for lawyers, and most people don't have that expertise. So I can't change Facebook. I can't change, you know, Instagram's terms of service, but you and I can make a commitment to be transparent and non-scummy about what we're doing. You and I can just decide we're going to make that commitment. So if you're going to use automation, and that just means branched messaging, right? You know, if I tell you I'm interested in cactus, then don't send me information about, you know, tropical fruit. If you're going to ask some questions in your email sequence or your chatbot sequence or your blog content, wherever it might be, just let people know why. You know, just tell people, look, I hate when my inbox gets cluttered. I know you hate that too. I find that if I send too much stuff and it's not relevant, people tune me out. So I only want to send you something relevant to what you're interested in. Just say it in plain, honest English or, you know, the language that your audience speaks. And, you know, then you hold to that promise. You only send them the information that's actually relevant to them. So you send fewer messages, but you make them, in a phrase that I used last week in a copy blogger post, you make those messages radically relevant. So just to wrap up, we do have a workshop coming up. Brian Clark is going to be talking about email automation and email segmentation with email marketing expert Isa Adney from ConvertKit, and just talking about, well, how to use some of these tools, how to use the technology to make messages more relevant, how to make them less spammy, and how to use these tools ethically. So using them to create a better user experience instead of like a spammy or scammy or creepy feeling user experience. So that is coming up the day after the air date for this podcast. It's Tuesday, April 24th, 2018. It's at 10 in the morning Pacific time and 1 in the afternoon Eastern U.S. time. You can get a registration link by going to copyblogger.com/leads-2-clients. Or if you're not good at listening to URLs, and I'm not particularly myself, just swing on over to copyblogger.fm. Look for the podcast about Cambridge Analytica, and I'll have a link for you there. And if you hear this too late to get that workshop, I'm quite sure it's not going to be the last one we ever teach. So I'm sure that link will be valid for future sessions as well on using automation, using segmentation, using the tools we have, but using them in a way that's that respects the audience and doesn't, you know, strip mine their privacy. So that's what I've got for you today. I would love to know your thoughts on this, and I would really be interested in your thoughts or resources that you find about what are the best practices? What should we be doing? If we had a voluntary code of conduct, what would it look like? Send them on over. Ideally, copyblogger.fm would be the best place, because then I know absolutely that they won't get lost. I get quite a few at mentions on Twitter, so sometimes things can get lost, which is no good, because I want to know what you have to say. Thank you, as always, for your time and your attention, and I'll catch you next week. Take care.